Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
The day's biggest stories, the people behind the headlines, the conversations you won't hear anywhere else. I'm Christy Strasser. You're listening to Odyssey's On Deadline. We have a lot to dive into, but we'll kick things off with an urgent warning from WWL in New Orleans. Check your backseat every time you get out of the car, and never leave kids or pets or anything else you care about back there.
3-year-old boy died after he was found inside a parked car with extremely high temperatures, according to the Ponchatoula Police Department. Joining us now, Chloe Burke, data manager with Kids and Car Safety. One is too many. I think this is the 12th to die in a hot car this year.
Yes, unfortunately, this is the 12th tragedy we've seen so far.
This child supposedly, I'm not trying to cast any aspersions, I'm just saying, according to the police report, climbed into an unlocked car. Is that the way it usually generally works?
So in every case we see, children getting into the vehicle on their own is about 25% of the time. But an overwhelming majority, about 54%, are when children are unknowingly left in the vehicle by a parent or a guardian.
How can that happen for people that don't understand? Because, look, I've been doing this job a long time, and we've had the conversation over and over, and inevitably I get texts from people, and they don't think that this can happen to them. But explain, if you will, some of the different scenarios under which people can leave a child in a car.
Yeah, so it's incredibly complex for people to understand, and people think, like, this would never happen to me. I would never leave my child inside the vehicle, when really all of our cases mainly involve a loving, responsible parent or caregiver who, with the psychology behind these cases, forget the child that was in the car in the first place. And it's mainly the two parts of the brain, the hippocampus and the basal ganglia, where the here and now memory in your hippocampus, where you might know you have to drive to the child's daycare, if there was a detour on the way to work, or you got a phone call, or, you know, these change in circumstance, along with typically sleep deprivation in new parents, can combine to make a catastrophic incident where they forget that the child's in the vehicle, they drive straight to work, right past the daycare, thinking the entire time that they dropped the child off. So, you know, that's where the autopilot part of the brain kicks in. And that's over half of the cases we see. And then again, 25% of the cases we see are with children getting into the vehicle on their own, which is relevant to what just happened recently.
And sometimes it can be a change in routine, right?
Yes, definitely. Typically, in most cases, we will see sleep deprivation or fatigue along with a change in routine. So it's really important. And we like to tell people that if there's a change in routine, if maybe dad's driving the kids to daycare and he typically doesn't, or vice versa, to be incredibly vigilant and make sure you're staying aware and conscious of the change in routine, just so that these incidents can't occur.
I bought a new truck last year, about a year ago today, as a matter of fact, and it has a warning to check the back seat. Is that the new technology in cars now? And I guess hopefully parents are paying attention to that. Maybe the numbers, what are the numbers showing? Are the number of deaths down?
So with end-of-trip reminders, a lot of parents believe that these are based on weight detection, where it recognizes that there's a child in the back seat. However, it's based on if the rear door was recently opened before the trip. If the rear door is opened within 10 minutes of the vehicle turning on, the end-of-trip reminder will be triggered at the end of the trip. These fail, though, in situations where a parent might stop on the way of their trip to get gas, and they turn the vehicle off on that second ignition, there will no longer be that end-of-trip reminder because you didn't open the rear door while getting gas. And so far, Kids and Car Safety has collected the loss of 14 beautiful babies that had end-of-trip reminders in their vehicles.
Are the numbers coming down at all year to year, Chloe?
So we've seen fluctuation in cases across the years, but relative, these are about 14 if for end of trip reminder losses, but 40, about 40 cases every year that we see in the United States.
And certainly one is too many. So what would your advice be to parents that are listening, or grandparents, or anybody that would transport a child?
So the first line of defense really starts within the home. You want to make sure your doors are locked and that keys and key fobs are out of reach from children even before they walk, because one day they will. And then on your trip, we like to tell parents or caregivers to leave an old stuffed animal in the back seat when they buckle their child in, to put that stuffed animal on their lap when driving, as a physical and visual cue that their child's still in the back seat. Upon ending the trip, they can throw that stuffed animal back in, take the child out, and make sure they're checking the floorboards, the third row, and the trunk, and then locking the doors behind them. It's incredibly important to leave your doors locked at all times, because you can prevent tragedies where children get into the vehicles on their own. And you do not have to be a parent or a babysitter or a caregiver to get involved in these cases. If you are a bystander and you see children or even pets unattended in a vehicle, regardless of if the windows are cracked, if the AC is running, or if the engine is on, call 911, stay with the vehicle. And if they prompt you to enter the vehicle by any means necessary, don't be afraid to do so.
Is there a website where people can go to find out more, Chloe?
Yes, they can visit our website at kidsandcars.org.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Chloe Burke, data manager with Kids and Car Safety. Somebody texted in and said, I play guitar and I never forget when I have my guitar in the trunk. I can't imagine anyone forgetting their child unless they're drunk or stupid. Well, I think this would be the exact kind of person that might forget a child in the back seat if you get out of your routine, because it's amazing. It's sad, but it does happen occasionally. And I got, I wouldn't go tell a story myself, but I will. I got distracted by the dogs fighting yesterday, and I had gotten, of all things, a watermelon peeling tool that I was going to put a little bit of water in the bottom of the sink, warm water to soak the tool, and then wash it. And I got distracted, and I left the sink running, and I filled not only the sink, but my garage with water that ran through the wall, through the cabinets, and everything else. So it can happen. You can get distracted. Water over a sink is one thing, a child in the back of a car another.
That's a threat to kids and pets. But how about threats to the Supreme Court? Here's WCCO in Minneapolis.
A rare event on Capitol Hill. Supreme Court justices testifying. Amy Coney Barrett and Elena Kagan are testifying before the House and Senate panels over the court's nearly $230 million budget request. It includes a 10% increase for security.
Justice Kagan argued the security measures are necessary in today's threat environment.
For some of us, those threats have come very close, and all of us live with the knowledge that they may again materialize.
The justices are expected to face questions on a wide range of subjects, including recent ethics scandals and controversial rulings, though they're expected to focus their testimony on their budget request. Peter Harlambous, ABC News.
Should Congress see the Supreme Court more often? Or is that a threat to the separation of powers? Here's Chad Hartman in Minneapolis.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Should the Supreme Court justices, with some rotation, appear every summer, two of them, let's just go two of them, appear in front of a House committee and a Senate committee and face questions? Because my gut is yes. Another part of me says it will turn into so many clicks and so many histrionics and so many videos for whichever Democrat or Republican is asking questions, when we could actually get something of merit from our justices. I do not think they should be appointed for life. I think, what do you think the max should be, Dave? 20 years? Is that enough?
That's fair.
20 years.
Seems pretty good.
That's your max. That's a long time.
Good run.
To have one of the 15 most important positions in the country.
A lot of power. And even when you're one of nine.
Right. Extraordinary amount of power. Why should one person, I don't care how liberal, how conservative that might be,
just have that position for 45 years.
And you're financially set the rest of your life. Even if you take that job at 40 and you're done at 60, you got the speaking circuit wherever you want.
Yeah, you should not have it. What do you think? Now, some people might come back and say, no. They are separate from our politics. But they're not really.
They're not separate from our government.
They're not. I don't need them to be screamed at. I don't need this to have some Democrat turning Amy Coney Barrett into the devil or some Republican with Elena Kagan. I would want people to actually do their job and maybe not be breaking down every decision, but have them face some scrutiny and in a give and take respectful way.
That's the key word.
But
if it's not respectful, there's no point.
Exactly.
If you can't actually let them speak, if it's grandstanding like we see so often, so reclaim my time.
Yeah, that's it. I don't need some flaming crazy lefty screaming at Barrett, just like I don't want to see some crazy flaming righty screaming at Kagan or Sotomayor and whoever we pick. But have them a part of it. Like you occasionally will see two, and we saw it a lot with Ginsburg and Scalia, appearing, right? Trying to show even though we disagree on so many issues, we're still agreeable, we're likable, and they would appear.
Mm-hmm.
That should happen. The problem is we never could agree on a reporter. You know, could we have, and I'm laughing because we couldn't agree on a reporter where twice a year said reporter who's well-respected by both sides would ask legitimate questions. So this time it's Neil Gorsuch. Next time it's Ketanji Brown Jackson. You know, and ask questions. But nobody would ever agree.
We'd agree on Major. Come on.
Major would be in the category of someone that people would agree with,
yeah.
Actually. Really would.
I agree.
Tim Russert probably would have been agreeable.
Sure.
Right? Tim's gone. I would like to see the Supreme Court justices term limited. I would like to see them face questions. And I have zero interest in Democrats who are going to run in 28 who say we need to add five to catch up to Trump. Because, so let's say Josh Shapiro wins. I think Buttigieg is on the record saying let's add a bunch more, which disappoints me because I agree with him on a lot of stuff. He's more left than I am on some social issues, but he's such an intelligent person. Like Marco Rubio, very intelligent. They're very intelligent individuals on both sides. But he's another one, add more. Well, then, okay, let's say some Democrat wins for four and then Vance sits it out, comes back. Is he going to add five more? Are we going to play this game until we get about 80 Supreme Court justices?
93 justices on the bench.
What a joke.
Yeah.
Want no part of it. A Florida judge is reprimanded for donating roughly $30,000 to left-leaning political causes. The Florida Supreme Court overwhelmingly called for a state judge to be fined after she donated $30,000 to left-leaning candidates, including Joe Biden. Judge Diana Tennis donated to former Senator Bill Nelson and 17 PACs like the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. She admitted to making, wait for it, 900 donations, totaling just under $30,000 since 2016. This is a violation of Florida judicial canon that prohibits judges from making political donations. She pleaded ignorance during a recent review. After the hearing, the state Supreme Court voted 6-1 in late June to reject her stipulation to a public reprimand. The court said she should be fined for her habitual donations, but did not say how much she should be fined. You know what she should be? She should be removed from office. The judge is telling us that she didn't know that judges shouldn't be making donations to any candidate? Are you bleeping kidding me?
It's just a couple donations.
And then it's clearly just a one side. This is a, to quote Tony Kornheiser, a gots to go situation. You're gone.
Speaking of judges, one must have authorized an FBI search of recently deceased Senator Lindsey Graham's place. But why?
20 FBI agents gathered at Lindsey Graham's residence. Capitol Police also on the scene. Two law enforcement sources are telling Scott Wong, I'm seeing here on Twitter, that they continue to investigate the death out of an abundance of caution. No evidence has risen since his death Saturday night. Is this just normal, right? He's a prominent senator. Does this happen all the time? We have the aortic tear. He just was returning from Ukraine. 20 FBI agents and Capitol Police at his house. If there's even a whiff of foul play, of course, pursue. But I certainly agree with him more when he was on the John McCain area than I did with him when he was more aligned with the president. But he should be here. He's 71 and celebrating his death is pathetic and gross, in my opinion. But what does that strike you as a little bit different?
It does. I can't think of any time I've ever heard of it. When through aortic tear, we all believe there's no foul play. This was a very unfortunate set of circumstances, but certainly not something someone could control from the outside in any way.
I guess we'll have to pay attention. What still stands out to Dave Harrigan about the Butler attempt on the president's life?
I think we'll call it the conspiracy theories around it, still stand out.
Yep. The number of people, like we looked it up before, it's like 25% to 30% believe this was a setup. A guy in the crowd, as you said, died. The individual who fired the weapon died. Donald Trump is capable of a lot of things. I haven't thought for a split second that this was a setup to create more sympathy towards him. Too many people talk. I just don't believe for any amount of time that we would be sitting here 2 years later and this great conspiracy theory would have fallen out of the sky.
In more Law and Order news, a Department of Homeland Security agent shot and killed a man in Maine, and people have questions.
What does suspending most vehicle stops tell you about what the administration's concerns are?
Well, I think that they are understanding that the public and other leaders, political leaders around the country are in disbelief that these policies of vehicle pursuits have been allowed to continue because they've ended in such tragedy. One in Minneapolis, and which we all, that was Renee Good, and then the gentleman in Houston last week, and now this one in Maine a day or two ago, that it tells us that they are capable of responding to reasonable pressure to at least temporarily cease a procedure that's led to these deaths.
The administration says it's a temporary pause while agents receive additional training. What would that training be?
That's a really good question, Margie, because I was on the San Francisco Police Commission for a couple of years, and I'm familiar with the policies dealing with vehicle pursuits locally and at the state level and in other jurisdictions. And the long and short of it is that you're not supposed to engage in vehicle pursuits because the pursuit itself can become deadly. And so the kind of training they need, which apparently they haven't had, is when is it proper to engage and when is it a better idea to disengage, because otherwise you might endanger innocent bystanders. Now in this situation, what's interesting is in both Houston and Maine, they acknowledge that the people that ended up being shot were not the original targets of their pursuit. And so that tells us even more that they've got to have better training on, listen, if you're after somebody who's a criminal or somebody has not shown up at their deportation hearings and might be dangerous, that's one thing. But if you can't find them, it doesn't give you the excuse to continue pursuing someone who you don't even know who it is.
That's right. I mean, this has been especially tragic. Can you talk about, you know, the authority that ICE has, well, at least had and may have again, to stop a vehicle during immigration enforcement versus how it's different from a routine traffic stop conducted by police?
As we all know, and many of us have experienced, when we are when we violated a traffic code, run a stop sign or not stop, that kind of thing, and it's in plain view, the police can stop us from doing that, or if we're driving erratically, that's a reasonable thing. Now, ICE officials can also stop people for traffic violations, which is a very controversial thing, but they claim that they can stop people for traffic violations, and that isn't what happened in this situation. But other than that, they are limited to the Constitution. The Constitution says they can only pursue someone if they have reasonable suspicion that the person is undocumented or deportable. And so if they have a license plate of somebody that they know is deportable, who has been convicted of a crime, they can probably go after that car. But if they don't, they don't have the authority to do that. So in summary, they can't go after someone just because, oh, that person looks, they're guessing that that person's undocumented, because that just isn't, that's not sustainable. You can't racially profile somebody and get away with it.
I want to pivot just a bit and talk a little bit bigger picture. The renewed deportation, I mean, maybe this is just me, we haven't had as many in the news lately, but the renewed deportation effort's been a bit quieter than previous high-profile surges. What is the situation in the Bay Area now?
It's continuing. ICE reported something like 10,000 people arrested over a period of 5 days, which was about 2,000 arrests per day. So that's a lot. That's a lot more than it's ever been in the year and a half. And we are seeing it in the Bay Area also. Okay. Every day there are arrests happening. I happen to be on the Rapid Response Network for San Francisco and San Mateo County. Last week alone, I recall at least 5 arrests that took place already in San Francisco. Yesterday, there was an arrest in San Francisco. And those are the reported ones, okay? Those are the ones that go into the hotlines. And so definitely ICE is engaging in arrests. They're not doing street sweeps. That's what they have refrained from doing, but they're going off of lists of people who didn't show up for their hearings or who have been convicted of serious crimes. Those are the lists that they're going after.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.